The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, where you can consider big ideas with the TED Radio Hour every Sunday afternoon at 1, and hear about others' ideas Sunday evenings at 7, with the new Planet Money, How I Built This program. Schedules for all of our stations can be found at KUAF.com. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, November 8th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, Kyle Peterson, the executive director of the Walton Family Foundation, discusses the foundation's goals and how they measure their efforts. That's in about 12 minutes on Ozarks at Large. First, the water quality of Arkansas's creeks, rivers, and lakes is attracting attention and concern. The Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality is asking the public, for the first time, to weigh in on just how the agency monitors the state's waters. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich invited former ADEQ senior ecologist Jesse Green to guide us through the process.
The Federal Clean Water Act requires agencies like the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality to assess the state's water quality every 2 years, providing a list of polluted waterways under Section 303D of the law. States declare certain waterways impaired based on individual surface and groundwater quality assessment methods and standards for designated uses, for example, drinking, agricultural, industrial, or recreational water uses. ADEQ also collects water data from various state agencies, including the Arkansas Department of Health, and operates 150 surface water monitoring stations sampling major rivers and lakes, sewage and industrial plant discharge zones, and agricultural waters. ADEQ also maintains around 250 groundwater monitoring stations, sampling aquifers and shallow wells. Once EPA approves a state's 303D impaired waterways list, it works with agencies to reduce pollutants. Jesse Green knows the drill very well. She was a senior ecologist in the Water Quality Planning Branch at ADEQ for more than 3 years.
That just means I was part of a team that was responsible for carrying out a lot of the requirements of the Clean Water Act, like developing water quality standards and assessing the waters within our state.
Green recently left her position at ADEQ to serve as executive director of a new nonprofit called White River Waterkeeper, a member group of the International Waterkeeper Alliance. She's headquartered in rural Newton County. Along with monitoring and protecting the White River Basin, Green says her personal mission is to educate the public to participate in state environmental regulatory decision-making.
And while we had a lot of entities, you know, groups, individuals, organizations that were active in commenting on things, oftentimes they were too narrow in scope or sometimes just missed the mark because there wasn't that background or fundamental understanding of how the regulatory process worked. And so there's really a lot of room for improvement, I think, as far as getting the public engaged in protecting our water quality in the state.
ADEQ maintains water quality monitoring standards for things like dissolved oxygen and water pH, acidity and alkalinity levels, she says. ADEQ also monitors for nutrients, a technical term used to describe things like crop fertilizers and animal manure. Here on the Ozarks, often spread on pastures to grow hay. But if applied in excess, those nutrients cause noxious algae blooms, choking streams and lakes of dissolved oxygen. And the state maintains a water quality standard for minerals.
Minerals in the context of water quality refer to your elemental ions such as calcium, magnesium, potassium. And the thresholds that we have set in Arkansas include specifically chlorides and sulfate, as well as total dissolved solids, which is a combination of all of those minerals, salts, even trace metals, anything that's dissolved within the water body. So that can even be organic matter. And our state is not utilizing the background ecoregion concentrations as a measure for what streams should be attaining for minerals anymore. And so those are kind of just out the window as it stands right now.
But the presence of excess minerals indicates a problem, Green says.
Very common from industry, also from agricultural runoff. We have, you know, mineral additives into our fertilizers. It's very common in urban areas. You know, we salt the roads during wintertime. We also get a lot of runoff just from our impervious surfaces.
ADEQ's minerals threshold is too relaxed, Green says, resulting in EPA not approving any ADEQ 303 impaired water lists since 2008.
The threshold that is set, in our water quality standards, was at 10%. So that just says that from that threshold limit, that whatever your criteria may be, that it can violate or exceed that standard a certain number of times. In our assessment methodology, it states that it can exceed 25% of the time. And this issue is because the state tried to remove the language, the 10% language, from our water quality standards, which is actually, you know, promulgated into law. And EPA has to approve our water quality standards.
EPA, Green says, is presently allowing ADEQ time to justify the raised minerals threshold. But this summer, EPA under the new Trump administration suddenly approved ADEQ's latest impaired streams listing for the first time since 2008. After reviewing the agency's water quality standards, this cycle ADEQ declared that 335 Arkansas waterways are dramatically improved, so have been dropped from the list. It made big news. White River Waterkeeper Director Jesse Green issued a public statement in response, saying the state's weak water monitoring assessment methods are to blame.
And this is concerning because at a time when our current political environment is proposing budget cuts to EPA, which could then be reflected in the funds that are appropriated to states for programs such as water quality monitoring, the last thing that we need to do is misrepresent the state of our water quality.
Green points as an example to Big Creek. It's a tributary to the Buffalo National River, which has defied impairment listing. The creek is adjacent to the state's largest industrial hog breeding facility, permitted by ADEQ to discharge more than 2 million gallons of liquid manure annually spread on nearby pastures. Independent sampling conducted by the National Park Service, as well as the Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, indicate elevated levels of E. coli, a fecal bacteria, and low levels of dissolved oxygen in Big Creek. The Alliance submitted its findings to ADEQ per the agency's request for outside data on the swine factory farm. More than 20,000 individuals also wrote letters of concern to the agency that the nation's first declared national river might be at risk. Renewal of the swine farm's permit, which expired last year, is presently under ADEQ review. It's still operating. But ADEQ is also seeking guidance from the public on its water quality monitoring methods.
The state has voluntarily chosen to open up the assessment methodology for public comment, input, and review, and has had the stakeholder work group, for the past year now. So anytime the public has ever commented on the assessment methodology in the past, it's been through the 303D list. And during that time, during the response to comments, people probably get pretty frustrated or have in the past because the responses back are things like, thank you for your comments, we might consider that, or this just doesn't apply. We're not discussing the assessment methodology. But now, probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity the public will have to submit their input on how the state is assessing our waters, and the state will respond. And so not only is that extremely important, it is also really remarkable that we are going to have this record. We are going to have transparency in the decision-making process and answers to why, which we pretty much haven't had that before.
Public comment on the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality's 2018 assessment methodology review is open through November 13th. A PDF of the current methodology can be found on ADEQ's Water Division Planning website. Jessie Green has also posted her comments for the public to consider on whiteriverwaterkeeper.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Links to the ADEQ's 2018 Assessment Methodology Review, as well as White River Waterkeeper, can be found at ozarksatlarge.com. The deadline to comment is November 13th at 4:30 that afternoon. The environment is one of the principal concerns of the Walton Family Foundation, along with K-12 education and the quality of life in Arkansas and the Mississippi River Delta. And just ahead on today's show, a conversation with Kyle Peterson, Executive Director of the Walton Family Foundation.
Located at 101 East Cherry Street in downtown Rogers, the Downtown Rogers Farmers Market features seasonal vegetables, bread, meat, and a variety of crafts. The market is open this winter, now through April, Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Information online, downtownrogersfarmersmarket.locallygrown.net or on Facebook. Walton Arts Center presents Canadian singer-songwriter and jazz trumpeter Bria Skonberg, November 10th at 7:30 p.m. as part of the Starlight Jazz Club series. Bria's jazz chops, mixed with worldly rhythms and contemporary songwriting, result in a sound that has been compared to Nora Jones and Diana Krall. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets.
An update to something we discussed here yesterday. The band Sons of Otis Malone, busy this week, preparing for a new release and for a goodbye of sorts performance with Ben Bergstrom, a founding member, leaving the Ozarks. The record is still being mixed as we talk, and the goodbye show we mentioned yesterday on Ozarks, now two performances. Sons of Otis Malone will now play an afternoon show at 28 Springs in downtown Solemn Springs Saturday, as well as the already scheduled evening show Saturday. Reservations are suggested, and those can be made by calling 28 Springs at 524-2828.
One of the hottest tickets on Broadway is The Boss.
Screen door slams.
Bruce Springsteen is playing a limited run, and fans with tickets have a tough choice.
I guess I don't really want to know what a stupid decision from an economic standpoint I'm making.
I'm Kelly McEvers. When you've got one of these tickets, should you sell or should you go? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. The Walton Family Foundation, based in Bentonville, is a foundation with a simple but rare approach to innovation, provides significant amounts of money toward bold challenges. The foundation is marking its 30th year, and this autumn, Kyle Peterson, the executive director, is marking his first there. Last Friday, Kyle Peterson came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to discuss the work of the Walton Family Foundation and its work in three specific areas: the environment, K-12 education, and the home region of Arkansas and the Mississippi Delta region. Peterson came to the foundation in Northwest Arkansas from his most recent home, Boston, and I asked him what prompted him to take this job.
The fact that there were bold ideas, like big ideas, like real stuff, you know, not abstract. I remember taking a bike ride with Jim and Lynn Walton, and we stopped at an overlook looking at Crystal Bridges, and it kind of hit me, like, this is the size of ambition to do good that the family has. And then all the conversations we had, you know, against our three different program areas of K-12 and the environment, and of course the home region, which is here in Northwest Arkansas, just really big ideas, but done doing work in a humble way, which is kind of, I don't know, that's like my approach to life. So it was a good fit.
You mentioned bold ideas, which is exciting. But can it be a little intimidating? I mean, bold ideas bring bold responsibilities.
Intimidating is a calm word for it. It's a calm word. It's I can remember, you know, 20 or 30 years ago, I started this adventure and social sector work and going into the Peace Corps 30 years ago. And I distinctly remember, you know, meeting various funders when I was overseas, and I always thought, wow, if I ever had the opportunity to do good through making resources available, you know, what would I do? And lo and behold, here I am. it is intimidating. Because the in some ways the sky's the limit. But you're working with partners, right? And this is, you know, you don't control things and you shouldn't, but you're working with partners, and it really is. It can be hard work. It's not easy to give away money and make impact happen. Some of the problems that we're trying to solve are some of the most intractable ones. So it's it can be sobering. You know, it can be really sobering. But I don't know. I get up every day and I am super jazzed. This is, I've said this before. You know, this is the job of a lifetime. I think I've, you know, entered into like the best part of my life. If I've hit a peak, it's now. And just I'm excited, even though it is indeed a little intimidating.
When you talk about big challenges, how do you tell if you're moving the needle, if you're moving it enough, and it's moving in the right direction?
It's a great question. I think every foundation struggles with this. You know, we don't have a quick way of calculating return on investment, even though you hear that term, in terms of doing good. We take the measurement part of this, you know, the evaluation and progress very seriously. We have a tremendous team of people who are part of our strategy, learning, and evaluation department. And so we look at every grant, and we want to make sure that we put in what we call output and outcome measures, and we sit down and talk with our grantees about, you know, each one. But we lift up on that. We lift up and we have indicators against our strategies. So as we look at our work in K-12, where we're working in 13 different cities, we actually want to see real improvement in those cities for kids overall. You know, improved attainment rates, improved graduation rates. And we actually track those things in a pretty serious way year on year. The family expects that. You know, that's part of they're very engaged and they expect to see progress. So we talk about that a lot.
What's the finesse in knowing it is working or why it's working? Because there can be external factors.
Yeah, this is the, you know, the age-old conversation about attribution versus mm-hmm. contribution. In other words, if not but for us, would this have happened? I think that's a bit of a folly, and, you know, there's probably even folks within the foundation would be different opinions about that. I think some things you never know. You know, are you the prime factor in bringing about change, or are you a minor factor? I think it's we bring contribution effects. We have a theory of change. That's our kind of term of art when we're taking on any problem, whether it's trying to make sure there's enough water in the Colorado River or thinking about education here in Northwest Arkansas. We have a theory of change, and we sort of set up in the beginning where we think things should go. We hope things to go. And then we document with, you know, we actually do the evaluation. We are not the type of folks who would wait a long, long time to see the progress. And I think that's with me coming on board in particular, I'm wanting to reduce that time period. And, you know, what indicators, what information can we get? And if we need to make course corrections, then we should do that. You know, you don't want to lose out on that opportunity to make a change.
Bold ideas, bold approaches to big problems or big challenges don't come without some controversy or criticism. What's that like when often you might announce an initiative, be it K-12, the environment, or even the home region, and you got an instant critic?
I think that's going to happen if you really care about impact. You know, I've worked with a number of organizations, all well-meaning, and I think there's ways you can kind of skirt the controversy. If you're sort of just playing some type of a role and you're active in an area, and again, there's no harm in that at all. But I think once you kind of convert over to a phase of really caring about impact and sort of saying we're accountable, you know, as a foundation with the family to certain results that we want, I think that changes the conversation. It changes the way how you receive criticism. And you don't want to create criticism just for the fun of it. But I do think that can happen. It can happen in a lot of different ways. What I think is interesting is that the foundation and, you know, the Walton family, there's one, we've got five components of our vision, or of our values. One of them is steady. And that's very, very intentional. And we're steady in the face of great progress and success, but we're also steady in the face of perhaps some criticism that we may receive because we care so much about, you know, the kids that we're trying to serve, you know, low-income kids who may be disadvantaged for whatever reason, for farmers or ranchers who are not able to get the water, or for people who are in the Delta in around New Orleans, who may be suffering from issues regarding hurricanes that are coming because of the lack of wetlands, and you have a problem there. So we care about those ultimate people we're trying to serve, and that's where our North Star is.
Some of these are macro, getting enough water, making sure that there's enough water in the Colorado River. Some are more micro, making sure the tree canopy is more varied and there's more of it in Benton County. Is there – there has to be a difference sometimes in approach to macro and micro. Yeah. I mean, you want the same sort of success.
And I think, you know, that's what's interesting about this foundation. You know, we have three areas of focus that I mentioned earlier. And that's – those are – have been around, some cases, for education for decades. The environment is probably over the last, 10 to 15 years, and certainly the home region for the last three decades. And in those areas, you really want to put all the muscle that you can and resources and more. There are other things that you can do that have nothing to do with financial resources, but your ability to collaborate, et cetera. But we have another area of the foundation that's really where individual family members can contribute their own personal philanthropy. And some of those ideas, we may not put the same level of evaluative attention. It might be a smaller grant. And I think what you want to do is you want to kind of build, according to the size and sort of the complexity of the particular problem.
This is the 30th year for the foundation. We love years with zeros, right? We love those anniversaries. For some reason, they seem more important than 29 or 31. But it also means that this was here for 28, 29 years before you came on board. So what was that like? I mean, because you've had people involved, obviously, for the entire run, and here comes this guy from Boston.
Yeah. I'm sure people still think about that. who is this guy from Boston? Well, I was born in Iowa and grew up in Ohio. So I'm a Midwestern guy. My family on my dad's side is from Wisconsin. My wife is from Milwaukee. So we're Midwesterners. We're born and bred Midwesterners. We lived in Boston for 16 years. So I think I come to the work, in particular in the work here in Northwest Arkansas, with that grounded respect for what has happened in the past. And that's one of the first things I did when I showed up was, not, hey, I got 15 ideas, let's go. It was to be much more quiet and to listen and to find out. Yeah, 30 years of work across not just Northwest Arkansas, but across the nation and globally.
Mm-hmm.
And to understand that and to understand, what had worked and maybe what had not, that was my first job. And I'm still doing that. I do approach this with, I want to build on what has worked in the past. And hopefully, I think if you can do that, then you can gain the respect of folks and bring in some new ideas, which I'm, starting to do. Well, it depends on where you are.
Right.
And it's what's so cool about this foundation is like this morning, I got up and went to this groundbreaking
the Thayden School. Yeah.
Which is fantastic. My son, whose name is Finn, he attends that school. He's in seventh grade. So I was there both as a proud daddy, but also as the head of the foundation. And we've helped, to resource that. And it's a miraculous thing. So that was my morning today. A couple days ago, I was in Denver, where we have an office. And it's quite unusual for foundations to have multiple offices. And we have an office in Denver, one in Washington, D.C., and one outside of Jersey City, outside of New York. And in Denver, we brought together dozens of partners and grantees in the area. And they're both from K-12 work in Denver specifically, but also in Colorado with our work in the river. And we had a number of family members there. And that really was about, you know, the environment and our national K-12 work. So a completely different group of people, completely different conversation. Almost every day is a bit different because the expanse is there's a, both the micro and there's the macro moving out even globally to Indonesia and to Chile and to Mexico and Peru.
What are the conversations like there when you're considering, you know, a grantee and you're trying to think about how to measure? I imagine this table and just folks sitting around and kind of trying to figure out how this would work. Would this work? Should we invest?
There's a lot of energy. Lots of energy in this foundation. A lot of this is relational, right? Mm-hmm. So it's conversations with our program officers, and we've got about 120 people now at the foundation. We actually have more people outside of Bentonville than we do here, and not many people know that. But it's very active. You know, we try to be on the ground as much as we can. So it's, I would say it's energized. It's face-to-face as much as we can in the areas where we're trying to solve these issues. And I think it's data-driven, you know, back to that kind of reflective quality. You know, there's a lot of data and information that we're talking about. So I think it's those, if those kind of three components are constantly swirling around our four offices.
When you have a bold idea and you're trying to change something, of course, you want it to be successful, but there's a chance it will either be slower progress than you wanted, different progress. I mean, you got to be ready for that, right? I mean, you don't – obviously, the plan is not for it to not be 100% successful, but what's that like? You got to be ready for bold ideas sometimes running into roadblocks.
And we do, you know, have that quite often. I think our leadership of our three program areas and our staff, they've been around the block. You know, they're experts. It's interesting if you actually were to talk with some of our program officers in the environment. These are people who have worked in senators' offices, or they've been academics. They've had real-world kind of in-depth experience on issues around the Colorado River or the Mississippi River. They know their stuff really well, and not just from a bookish perspective. You know, we're not an ivory tower foundation at all. They know it, you know, from the day-to-day, the hard knocks that can come, you know, creating systemic change, which is a little jargony.
Yeah.
But right, it is
ambitious, yeah.
But like if you're trying to change a system like the Colorado River, which is not just a, you know, a long-flowing stretch of river, it incorporates all sorts of people and all sorts of entities that are resourcing it, you know, there's lots of interest there and incentives and counter-incentives that you have to understand and appreciate. So there's a healthy dose of real-world experience in the foundation.
Depending on the study you read, we are either at a most divided time since the Vietnam War, or perhaps some studies even suggest the Civil War. Anything a foundation can do to minimize that division?
Well, it's not a...
Talking about a bold challenge.
Yeah, it is a bold challenge. You know, I don't think we don't have a chosen program area.
Yeah.
But there is something about the family and about the ways in which we work, which I'd say bridging divides, pulling people together, unusual bedfellows, is something that we do all the time. In fact, going back to the change I was just talking about, if you don't do that, you will not get the change. So, for example, you know, the work that we're doing in the Louisiana Delta, if you want to bring about coastal restoration, if you want to bring 800 square miles, and this is a target that we have, of wetlands back that disappeared, that are now in the ocean, if you want to bring that back through the Mississippi River, and there's ways to do that where you can actually create land, it requires – that's scientific, right? But it requires bringing together business people, politicians, bankers, real estate agents, fishermen, almost every constituency you can imagine to have that sustained voice, because there's many other issues, you know, in these areas. So I think what we can do, we play a special role in bringing together groups that probably have never come together being a neutral kind of backbone to doing that. And that's a pretty special role. And I don't know if that's the answer to the question of, you know, solving all the problems of the nation's divides right now. But we've got some good, you know, kind of behavior on that and good attention. And I think the family in particular, that's I think they consider that to be part of our role, this kind of coalition building.
Kyle Peterson is executive director of the Walton Family Foundation. And our conversation took place in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio last Friday. And in full disclosure, the Walton Family Foundation is an underwriter for Ozarks at Large.
From the time your feet hit the floor in the morning to when your cereal hits the bowl, the news can change pretty radically.
We don't know what the charges are.
The allegations became public. Harvey Weinstein said he was going to take a leave.
Driving a rented Home Depot pickup truck, entered the West Side
Highway. And when it does, Morning Edition keeps you up to date with reliable, fact-based, and efficient reporting. We hope you wake up with Morning Edition tomorrow.
Morning Edition every weekday morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. Every Friday night at 10 is Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsberg. But we don't have to wait till Friday to hear Robert. He's in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio right now. How are you?
I'm good, Kyle. How are you?
Very good. November is not National Jazz Month.
No, but it seems like it. It's coming on strong. There's a lot going on.
Let's start with tomorrow night, Friday night. Rhea Schoenberg?
Schoenberg.
Schoenberg will be at Walton Arts Center.
Yeah, and Kyle, I think this is sold out. There might be a few tickets, you know, if there's cancellations, but she is really a quadruple threat. She's gorgeous. She's incredibly talented as a trumpeter, as a singer, as a songwriter, and she's quite the entrepreneur. She's really managed her career well. She's taking off from Chilliwack, Canada. She's been compared to Diana Krall and Nora Jones, but she really is her own woman and a great musician. She'll be here with her group at Walton Arts Center, the second concert in the Starlight Jazz series, and it'll be a lot of fun. I had fun interviewing her earlier.
Yeah, you talked to her, and you mentioned that she's from Chilliwack, B.C., and she talked a little bit about that, right?
Yes, she did.
And especially as I moved to New York City, which has been 7 years now, I got, I met the great trumpeter Lou Soloff pretty early on, and he said, you know, in New York, in a place like New York, there's always going to be somebody who plays faster, somebody who plays higher. The only chance you have of survival is to figure out what you have that's unique and really owning that and really making that part of yourself and understanding that. And at that moment, what I realized, funny enough to be thousands of miles away from home, is that I'm the only trumpet player here from Chilliwack that I know of. So, and the flood of like the spirited energy from the teachers, from the culture, from the community there, just that grounded me in a way and anchored me as a human being, you know, and virtually just for everything that has come since then.
You think it's sold out or it's close to being sold out tomorrow night at Walton Arts Center?
Yeah, it's going to be a great show. I think that if somebody really, really wants to go, they could show up, and sometimes there's cancellations.
Yeah.
And they open up tickets sometimes because they have to hold back a certain amount for emergencies. So,
well, let's say we miss that. There are other opportunities to hear great live music this week.
Kyle, Crystal Bridges has just got all kinds of jazz going on around the Stuart Davis exhibition that's happening right now. And if you haven't seen the Stuart Davis show that's hung as of last month, it's amazing. He was an artist who came up right after the turn of the century, early 1910s through the 60s. And his career and his painting paralleled the jazz world, and it was happening as jazz was really in its formative years. And he was quite into the music, a big Earl Hines fan. So to help complement that exhibit, they're doing all sorts of jazz events. And November 18th is a big one. It's going to be from 6:30 in the evening till 11:30, And there'll be almost 30 jazz musicians spread out throughout the museum all evening playing in different contexts. Just to give you a quick rundown,
sure.
It's called Art Night Out. And I want to mention this. They're doing a bunch of stuff for kids, and they're kids are free. So, and it's very reasonable for adults, $12 to $15, I believe. But anybody under 18 gets in free. And they're in that regard, they're bringing in Lisa Henry, one of the summer jazz concert singers from Kansas City we had this year. And she's going to do a jazz storytelling thing for kids and adults. And then they're also having a instrument petting zoo. So those things, right. those are kind of geared towards kids. But Lisa is also going to do a set in 11, just a nightclub jazz with a trio. Elaine will be in the Great Hall giving a swing dance lesson before the Fayetteville Jazz Collective 18-piece big band comes on for an evening of big band music and dancing. Dr. Jim Greason will be performing solo guitar in one of the galleries. Jacob Herzog from the university will be performing solo guitar in another. I have Trio De Janeiro there, which is a great bossa nova trio. And also, he hates this, and he's going to be angry at me, but Jim Jernigan is leading a second line band, which is with Al Gibson on trumpet and Stu Edelman on trombone and Jim on clarinet. And I'm calling it Jim and the Jernigonians. But they're going to be marching all through the museum with his second line band. Maybe there's reason that he doesn't like
well,
that.
You know. We'll leave it to the ear of the beholder there. This is all when?
This is all November 18th. It's a Saturday. Also, a great piano bar guy who sings like everybody. He's kind of a chameleon. He can sound like Willie Nelson or Elvis Presley or Frank Sinatra. His name is Alan Oxenhandler, a guy I grew up with in St. Louis. He's going to be in 11 playing the Steinway and singing in there. So all of this going on throughout the evening.
Quickly, the Claudia Burson Trio every Sunday in
right.
Rogers.
Right.
At
Copeland's
right.
Restaurant, which they do a great a brunch up there. Amelia's here in Fayetteville does a jazz brunch, and they usually have Matt Smith and his dad Gus sometimes play. It's a lot of fun.
That's on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
Right. And Studio 18, or is it Stage 18?
Stage 18.
They once a month do a thing with Jacob Herzog.
Just sort of this jam session.
Sort of a jazz jam session. So all of these things are happening, and there's more. Roby Pantel has a regular date at Ruth Chris Steakhouse. If you know of events or if you want to find out more about events, email me because the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society does a listserv. We send out regular emails that are just subject line jazz events, and we try to let everybody know. So if you've got an event you want to add to that, let me know, or if you just want to be on the mailing list, it's robert@digjazz.com, digjazz.com.
robert@digjazz.com, and, you know, if you want to send him some better ideas for Jim Jernigan's band, they can do that as well.
the Jernigonians.
That's pretty good.
It kind of grows on you, doesn't it? Never mind.
Okay. Shades of Jazz every Friday night at 10. And we should mention Steve Wilkes and Jazz Travels Saturday nights at 10 on 91.3.
91.3 is supported by Urban Jungle Tropical Plant Care and Rental, offering a variety of indoor plants, living green walls, and outdoor planters for restaurants, offices, and homes. Urban Jungle, serving Benton and Washington counties with maintenance-free, month-to-month care and services. 466-5033 or urbanjunglenwa.com. Additional support provided by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the region's daily newspaper, offers local news where we live, play, and work in Benton and Washington counties. It's one newspaper for one region. The Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette, online at nwadg.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. This week's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report, just ahead. Walton Arts Center is adding to its spring performance list. The venue announced this morning the trio I'm With Her, featuring Sarah Watkins, Sarah Jarosz, and Aoife O'Donovan, will perform in Fayetteville Tuesday, April 17th at 7 p.m. Tickets go on sale a week from tomorrow, that's November 17th, at noon. A digital download of the trio's forthcoming album will be included in the ticket price of $32.50. The show is presented in association with the Fayetteville Roots Festival. Also headed to Northwest Arkansas, the 1 millionth visitor to the Bentonville Community Center since the center opened in June 2015. The city expects that 1 millionth visitor anytime, and next week, the center will host a day-long celebration on Monday. At noon Monday, the 1 millionth visitor will be honored. Since its opening slightly more than 2 years ago, there have been state swim meet championships, fitness classes, rotary meetings, wedding receptions, and the other sorts of events that would get us to the 1 millionth visitor.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Pete Souza left his job as White House photographer when President Obama left office. Now he's getting political with his photos on Instagram.
Compared to the comments I make on Instagram, they pale in comparison to what some people write on Twitter, for instance.
That's next time on Here and Now.
Today, beginning at 1 on 91.3.
A long-awaited curtain goes up today in Bentonville. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Skylight Cinema, a six-screen theater showing first-run movies, opens today in the Arts District of Bentonville. That's about five blocks southwest of the downtown square. It marks the first time a cinema has been in operation in the town since the Plaza Theater, located in what is now the Meteor Guitar Gallery, closed in 1985. The Northwest Arkansas Downtown Revitalization Fund, which is funded by Walton Heirs Tom and Stuart Walton, owns and developed the property. Last year, a spokesman for the group said the theater would be ready in time for the Bentonville Film Festival in May, but the opening was delayed by several months. The cinema will also serve fast casual gastropub fare through its full-service restaurant and bar called The Cutting Room. It's operated by brothers Don Ray and William Ray. They also own Cannibal and Craft and the private bar Ben's Apartment on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Skylight's opening weekend will feature several films including Daddy's Home 2, Murder on the Orient Express, and Loving Vincent. Tickets are also available online for future screenings of Justice League and Star Wars The Last Jedi. For more about downtown Bentonville's newest amenity, be sure and read the story on our website. You can find it at nwabusinessjournal.com. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Josh Davies will be the keynote speaker at the third annual Northwest Arkansas Workforce Summit on November 15th at Northwest Arkansas Convention Center in Springdale. Davies is CEO of the Center for Work Ethic Development in Colorado. The event is hosted by the Springdale Chamber of Commerce. I discussed the event recently with Bill Rogers from the Chamber. He said the summit has a dual purpose, to raise the awareness of workforce training and to bring together business and policy leaders with educators from area school districts.
Everyone has their own piece of the pie. Educators, they're helping those students learn about the opportunities. But the business community, what they've told us is maybe everyone doesn't have a good idea of what our current needs are. So this event blends all those together, and hopefully at the end of the day, we walk out with a large group of business and educators in Northwest Arkansas who are inspired again about the importance of improving workforce training in Northwest Arkansas.
You mentioned the response from the business community. What has been their response in terms of their participation growing the last 2 years and in terms of what they take away as the big value of this event?
They love it. Mm-hmm. They love it through the lens of they've got a job to do every day, and you kind of have to turn that boat just a little bit and help them recognize the opportunity that it's in front of them. And as each year of this event has gone on, that's an easier explanation to make. They know they have needs, but they've never spent a lot of time spending thought processes, how can we address these needs? And as they've come to see this event, gets them in the same room, often around the same table with teachers who are engaging on a daily basis with their future workforce. Mm-hmm. How can those two sides come together and tell the story to this emerging workforce that no matter what, whether it's the trades, whether it's construction, whether it's technology, every sector, diesel, we hear so much about diesel technicians. Every sector has great needs, and then you layer that with the pressure of the low unemployment we have in our area. It's affecting the business's ability to be profitable because they can't find enough people. And this is just one of the tools that we're putting on the table to try to help improve that situation.
You're going to bring in as your keynote speaker Josh Davies, the CEO of the Center for Work Ethic Development in Denver. What can you tell us about him and his work?
Two different sessions, actually, on work ethic. You know, you get a group.
It's probably worth two sessions, work ethic development, right?
I know. You get a group of business owners and HR professionals in a room, and yes, they have physical needs, but I mean, they say, well, we can train to that. You know, you get us somebody who'll show up to work on time, who has a good work ethic and is easy to get along, is teachable. We can teach them how to fix a widget or whatever it may be. It's a tremendous challenge. Josh will be the keynote. In fact, he's our first speaker of the day. Will come in. Hey, his organization. That's all they work on, and they tell us that they have some usable techniques and tools that can be used in the real world. Then, kind of closer to home, Takesha Moncrief. She and her husband Sidney Moncrief. For those old enough to remember, the former Razorback All-America and NBA. Star also have an organization that addresses work ethics, so that'll be in the afternoon. Just a chance to provide some additional tools because there are a lot of tough nuts to crack in the world, but work ethic for this emerging workforce is a huge issue, and it's a tough nut to crack.
Right. Now, work ethic and the Moncrief name, I'm sure that sells itself. I mean, like you say, for those of us who are of a certain age who know who Sidney Moncrief and his family are, in addition to the summit on the 15th, there's a related event the previous day on November 14th that involves high school students. Tell us about that.
You know, and they'll get the chance to hear from Josh as well. So not only with the employers, get a chance to hear some tools about the importance of that soft skills. But those 500 kids, after touring the 34, 35 businesses that will be there to tell their story, at lunchtime they'll come together all as one group and hopefully hear from someone other than their parent or their teacher that, you know, these soft skills, mama skills we like to call them, really are important. And then if you'll pay attention to those, they open the doors to tremendous opportunity for your career, not just getting a job, but keeping a job and advancing in the job that you do get.
Right. Still time to register, I guess?
Still time to register. Okay. It's only a $49 ticket, 9 o'clock until 3 in the afternoon. Lunch is thrown in. We'll be at the Northwest Arkansas Convention Center. Website's available, but they can call the Springdale Chamber. I want to give a shout out to our two lead sponsors, Walmart and the Northwest Arkansas Council. As I mentioned, this is a regional event, and without that regional buy-in, it would not be the success it is.
Right. Okay. Not quite the chicken picking and politicking yet, but it's becoming a big event on the chamber's calendar every year.
It really is. Chicken peeling and
politicking. Chicken peeling and politicking.
The largest event of its kind in Arkansas. Right. Now, I tell you what, we've been very fortunate, and as important as that is in political networking, at the end of the day, this event, if we can make some improvements and some changes and help businesses find better trained employees, we'll all be better for it.
That's Bill Rogers with the Springdale Chamber of Commerce discussing the upcoming Northwest Arkansas Workforce Summit. It's in Springdale at the Northwest Arkansas Convention Center on Wednesday, November 15th.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom, providing voice and data solutions that adapt to today's demand with tomorrow's technology. Communication tools that integrate mobility with the desktop and merge wired networks with the wireless technology. More at one-comm.com or 479-715-8800.
In the upcoming issue of the Business Journal, our industry focus is on healthcare. And we'll have a progress update on the Arkansas Children's Northwest campus that is nearing completion in Springdale. We'll also have a Q&A with Dr. Regina Thurman of Fayetteville. She is the medical director of Optimal Pain and Wellness, and in August was appointed board chairman of the newly formed Arkansas Medical Marijuana Association. And we'll also visit with a group of doctors in Rogers who have adopted a different way to run a doctor's office. It's called direct primary care. You'll find those stories and much more in the next Northwest Arkansas Business Journal. You'll find the digital version for free next week on our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. That's all for today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Ponca. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for spending part of your Thursday with us. We're back tomorrow at noon and 7 with a brand new edition of Daily Ozarks at Large. But before we go, let's listen to music from the Ozark Highballers. The Ozark Highballers, along with Sugar on the Floor, Willie Carlisle and the Old 78s in concert tomorrow night in Clapp Auditorium on Mount Sequoia at the Mount Sequoia Conference Center in Fayetteville. It's part of the Fine Times at Our House weekend of old-time music, dance, and much more. We'll end with the Ozark Highballers version of My Ozark Mountain Home, recorded at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Have a great rest of your Thursday.